Hey, my name is Kevin Clark. I'm the host of a new football podcast called Slow News Day. I want to tell you about it. On Mondays, Lindsey Jones and I will recap the weekend in football that was, as well as look ahead to what's next. On Wednesday, the normal Slow News Day, the thing you've been watching for years, current players, current coaches, current analysts talking about the football world. And on Friday, it's a wild card. Could be some college football, could be more pro stuff. It's a video podcast, so you can watch it on Spotify or listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. Follow on Spotify. It's Slow News Day.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. Whether it's taking all your little ones to their sporting events or everybody getting together and taking a ride to the beach, the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped for any adventure. With features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com.
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident. It was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
What's poppin'? Real ones. Logan Murdoch here, Raja Bell there. Raja. So, full disclosure, recording this at 1:19 Pacific time on the West Coast. We usually record these pods very early in the morning, as I'm sure every one of our listeners can tell by my performance in the morning. So, then Raja says, hey, I gotta go do something. And let's push the pod back. And I'm thanking my lucky stars that he did that, because we now can talk about a trade that is rocking the NBA world. Jordan Poole sent to the Washington Wizards for Chris Paul. Wait, let me revamp that. Jordan Poole plussed some picks to Washington for Chris Paul. Raja, I have a lot of thoughts. You have been driving on the turnpike or wherever you've been driving in Florida for the last 45 minutes thinking about right. This. What are your immediate thoughts on this trade?
Well, my immediate thoughts, I had a lot going on, so I didn't have a time to digest it until I really got in the car, and it's kind of, I'm formulating an opinion, you know, kind of as we speak. My son, my middle son, Ty, called me like 20 minutes out from here and told me what happened. Right? It just dropped. He was like, Chris Paul just got... And my immediate reaction was like, what? Like, why? What are we talking about? Why would Golden State need Chris Paul? But as I'm thinking about it more, I do see other areas that I would hope that they could solidify. But if you're talking about an aging, and just bear with me, right? Because I really am just off the top right here. If you're talking about, you know, Steph Curry and trying to maybe lessen the workload on him as a you know, ball handler, play creator, and all that entails on a nightly basis. If you're trying to lessen the load on him, you're trying to find someone else who can orchestrate and kind of create plays in a league where play creation is at a premium. I kind of get it. So I can make a case either way. Ultimately, I didn't think that was a move that they need to make. I didn't think of the moves that could be made. Like, I didn't know that was the most pressing thing to get a Chris Paul type of player. But I guess what I'm saying to you is I could see the rationale behind, all right, we still got Wiggins on the wing. You know, you have Clay, who's basically a spot up guy at this point. You have Draymond, who's a facilitator, kind of playmaker. You bring in Chris Paul, who plays great in pick and roll and can distribute and orchestrate it, take some of the pressure off of Steph to have to do that on a nightly basis, and frees him up to just kind of be more off the ball, I understand what they were trying to do there. I thought there were other things that were more pressing for them, though.
So I think all of the things you said are correct in terms of, in theory, I can make a case of why they would want to make a trade for someone like Chris Paul, right? I mean, I watch the Warriors probably more than any other team I watch on a nightly basis, obviously, right? Being Iron the Bay. And the thing that they were missing consistently was a backup ball handler who can play. The biggest thing is they could play in the non-Steph minutes, right? And for as great a scorer as Jordan Poole was, he did struggle being a point guard with the second unit. Right. In some ways, they would have to, Steve Kerr would have to put Draymond into the second unit just to have a primary ball handler to do that. So for those reasons, I see why you would want a point guard to be able to do that and, like, you know, just offset Steph. And also, Chris Paul on paper, Hall of Famer, right? Has all the championship experiences and all of these things, right? But my first thing is, and I would love to hear you talk about this as the basketball mind here, but from my vantage point, I don't think Chris Paul is a fit because, one, he's 38 years old. Two, he is a pick and roll point guard on an offense that is a motion-based offense where it prioritizes movement on a consistent basis.
Yep.
Also, we know this. Chris Paul, in every situation that he's ever been in, has to be an alpha. And in a locker room that is not his, right? That's one thing I'm curious about, right? Because I'm not going to put anything out that he can't do it. I'm not going to say that, but I'm just saying history suggests that as an alpha, he has to, the orbit has to be around Chris Paul. Now, on this team, this is never going to be Chris Paul's team. This is Steph Curry's team and Klay Thompson's team and Draymond Green's team. And Chris Paul is coming into that. I'm very curious that adjustment for all parties involved of having a guy like that because, you know, the alphaness doesn't turn off. It just doesn't, it doesn't do that. And did I mention the fact that he's 38 years old?
Yeah.
Raja.
You did. And he's injured.
And he's often injured. I saw him in last year's postseason live and he was not very good. There's a reason why Kevin Durant and Devin Booker had to carry much of the offense because there was no other offense to be had from Chris Paul. So for all those reasons, I think about it in theory of like, yeah, I get why the Warriors would want another point guard to just offset the non-Steph minutes because Jordan Poole, for as great as he is as a scorer, just didn't fully do that. But I just don't think that this was the trade to do it, Rob.
Yeah, well, I mean, 100%, right? Like, that's not what you did. You didn't go out and get a backup point guard that can offset the Steph minutes. Like you went in and got in the guy that you just described. And so, I mean, yeah, 38. What were we saying about the Warriors at times in the Sacramento series when Sac kind of had their fangs in the Warriors? Like, what were we saying about
them? They looked old.
They looked old.
Like, old as fuck. Malik Monk was like, Darren Fox was, it took a 50-point fucking road. One of the greatest performances of all time from Steph Curry for them to get out of that first round series because they were too old.
Right. They looked old. And then, hey, my goodness. Not even in that series, right? But we've talked at length about Golden State, the championship window and what needs to be done to extend that window, keep it open for Steph and some of those guys. Every conversation revolving around that specific topic includes getting younger players that you develop and that can come in here and continue to kind of take the baton from these guys as the tread wears thin on the tire. So like, again, I didn't think it was necessarily a trade, but I understand there's a part of me that sees what you're trying to do there. But let's just touch on the basketball part and the human being part. You are correct in that, at least through this, you know, through so far in Chris's career, he's been on teams where the ball is in his hands. Relatively speaking, there isn't a ton of movement. and he is in some sort of pick and roll action, and then he becomes the creator for whatever the end of the play is going to be. There will be opportunity to do that, but obviously he is going to have to change kind of his philosophy in terms of how he plays the point. He's going to have to play with more pace. He's going to have to be willing to get off of that ball. He's going to have to move in a way that teams haven't really asked him to move off of the ball. And, you know, he's, you know how much I love Russ. And I don't know that they're not the same human being. They're not the same player. But the point is, you're asking an old dog to learn new tricks. Sometimes that's not as easy as you think. And I would say that that part of it, the on the court, would be easier than asking that same old dog who's used to going into locker rooms and being the voice to go into a locker room. And while I'm sure he'll still have a voice, they're not going to ask Chris Paul to come there and not, you know, not be a part of culture driving and all of that. But you've got strong personalities in Draymond, you know, and stuff like that. So to ask him to turn that off is probably even harder than asking him to get off the ball and move without it.
Yeah, 1,000%. And I think that just from a standpoint of, I think we just saw this in spurts with Miami, right? And Miami's a little bit younger, but I think the best role that Chris Paul can play is the Kyle Lowry role down the stretch of the season, and they need him for the postseason. And I mean, I'm making arguments for a deal that I don't agree with, so bear with me. I'm pulling the Raja devil's advocate right here. But like, on one hand, I do get it, because you want to have, we all know that the playoffs are a different beast, and if you don't have guys you think you can depend on, you need to get a guy that is dependable in the postseason, right? And a lot of that has to do with veteran guys. You get a lot of guys, but usually you get those guys for the cheap, Roger. Like, if you needed one of those guys, you go to the buyout market, you can get a guy on a vet minimum that's willing to win a title. Chris Paul has a gargantuous salary next year, and I don't want, I mean, he earned that. He got a, and I'm not pocket watching, but this goes against every single thing that the Warriors have said that they wanted to do over the last few years, Raja. And what is that? It's the two-track plan, where we're going to phase these guys out, and we're gonna try to get the championship core their rings while also bringing in a new generation of players, right? That's on the one hand. On the second hand, well, the biggest thing that they've been trying to do is get younger, and then they just pivoted and said, oh, we're just going to be older off the street. Like, man, I saw them last year get almost run off of the floor a lot of times, not because they weren't skilled, but because, like for instance, I think about the Sacramento series where the Warriors were, they would get big leads and they would lose them because they're the older guys sometimes just couldn't keep up, man. They just couldn't keep up with a Malik Monk, or as in an era where they needed to get younger, they did not do that. And I think with this Chris Paul deal, man, it's just going to be interesting just how what this says about the Warriors going forward. Because there's one thing, Roger. They have a new front office person. They have a new general manager in Mike Dunleavy, who was an assistant general manager under Bob Myers. And there's been a lot of talk, you know, there were a lot of talk early on after Bob Myers stepped down that Kirk Lacob would be in charge, right? That's Joe Lacob's son. He would be, I think a lot of the stuff that I heard about was that he might be VP of basketball operations. We don't know who is going to be driving this front office going forward. We don't know that yet. We don't. Now, we know titles that are in place, but we don't know going forward who is going to have the biggest voice in that front office. So it's going to be interesting how these types of play out, whose voice wins out now that Bob Myers is not in the picture. Because I'll tell you what, man, Bob Myers' voice was so big into that organization that he's almost like a cult-like figure in there. And now it's like once he's out of the picture, everybody's trying to get positioned. And that's going to manifest in trades like this. That's going to manifest in signings that are like,
well,
what?
Let me interject.
Because there's not an exact one.
Let me interject. I'm sorry. Allow me to do this for anyone that that may be listening in the Golden State. Like, whoever you listen to, whatever voice was listened to on this particular trade, listen to the other guy. That's where I'm. Hey, listen. I reserve the right, as we always do. Right? No, yeah, facts.
Exactly.
Yeah, facts. Listen to the other so mom. Listen to him next time.
It's just, I'm just going to be curious to see that, right? Because this trade, just every time, even when we try to rationalize it, it's like, but this, but that. So we talked about the Chris Paul version, and we'll probably get back to that as the pod goes on. We're only 14 minutes in, but I do want to talk about the Jordan Poole part of this. And I feel for the guy because he got traded for no other fact than he got punched in the face. There's no other, there's like, right? Like there's no other, there's no other way to slice it. It is what it is. What happens in the preseason happens. It brings a divide among the team. And then the team who was going through a front office, well, how would you call it, transition, doubles down on the old big three and then trades one of the only promising young pieces that they had. And it's interesting because I want to read you this quote, Roger, because this is how tough the NBA is. I talked to Jordan like a day after the season ended, and for a piece that I did called "The Two Timeline Failed in Golden State." I'm going to read the quote that he said. He says, "I don't know why I wouldn't be back. It wasn't a bad year. I mean, I had career highs in two categories. I was able to make history with Clay and Steph. I had my first game winner. It was a lot of things that helped in this season. It wasn't a bad season. Yes, I'm in the fabric. Yes, I belong here in this organization, bridging the gap. And I'm a young guy who was drafted here. We won a championship last year, and we have another chance to do it again. And I don't know why anybody else would feel otherwise. I don't think anybody else is thinking that." That is very tough.
That's heartbreaking.
Jordan, like, he just bought a crib out here. He was, despite all the stuff, was invested into the fabric.
And I wasn't Jordan Poole by any stretch of the imagination, but I know exactly how that feels.
Right? Just got a crib out here. Is like just about to start his extension. Also, another thing, which is not good business when it goes. The other day in that same press conference, Mike Dunleavy was asked about Jordan Poole and said, hopefully he's here for four more years until the end of his contract. A few days later, he trades the guy, right? Not good business. Very, 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 not a great thing to be saying, right? And so all of that happening, Jordan Poole, it's like this avatar for what went wrong with the Warriors, when in actuality, he's better than the return that you just got for this, right? You just sent two picks out there with him.
Yeah.
Two picks out with him to Washington for this. It just doesn't make any sense, Ra.
Yeah, that's a tough one, man. We're gonna go a young 20-point-per-game scorer and two picks for a 38-year-old PG who doesn't play your style and is rarely healthy. Like, I love Chris Paul, but like,
we love Chris Paul, Hall of Famer.
It just, man, that's a tough one, man. And I don't mean it because, again, I'm telling you, while I sit here and give you my gut, I'm also going to do what I do and tell you I could kind of see what they were trying to do, but And you're right. Like, I hate to boil it down to, hey, man, he got punched in the face. But, you know, between that and just not being himself in the playoffs, like, you know, he just didn't have a great playoffs. And, you know, that's a tough one, but 20, you know why? Look, 20 points a game, you know how hard it is to score 20 like points a game consistently in the NBA? Like, when you know, you're not the first option, like, and you're able to score and create the way he does. That's a skill. I feel bad for him because I feel like he's the type of player at the point in a career where the consistency and the stability of Golden State and the winning, what was for whatever reason, this might not be fair to him, but for whatever reason, I feel like it was specifically important for someone like him. And if you take him to dysfunction and to rebuild mode until we won't win a lot of games now, I feel like it's a pivotal moment in his career, if that makes sense. Like this, you know, like, you're on track to learn how to be a really good player on a championship level team. And maybe at some point, if you continue to develop, have the mantle pass to you in that regard. And now you're going into like the abyss where shit can get really squirrely on bad teams, even for good players that can score the ball. Like, you could fuck around and be looking up in 3 years, like, what the fuck happened?
It's crazy because it's like, it's people don't talk about this side of the NBA. Like, we're going, and this is, I should preface it by saying this is like part of Washington. If you look at it from the other side, this is part of Washington. Washington rebuilding, right? And they're doing the right thing. They should rebuild in the way that they do. But the other side of, they have a new general manager and they have a new front office, and they are trying to build their own situation and finally get DC back on track from a basketball sense. But as a consequence of that, there's going to be, they might be the worst team in the league next year. You know, I'm serious. They might be the worst team in the league next year. And for a guy that is just known to be compete for titles, and then he's going to go into this situation. Well, yeah, he's going to score. He's going to get his buckets, but he's going to be irrelevant. The team's going to be irrelevant. And he's going to be the face of that, a face of a franchise that is irrelevant now. And that is demoralizing. It's interesting because, you know, Jordan, you know, one of the critiques of him, I guess, is, at least from players in the locker room in Golden State, was he was a guy, and this is a critique for him, but also a critique for a lot of the guys that were in that locker room, is that these dudes don't know how good they have it because they are not in the real NBA. That was a common refrain from just Warrior vets to the youngins. They don't know about the real NBA. Mm-hmm. And now JP is going to go to the real NBA, which is, you know, you're fighting for scraps. You're going to, you know, like the Wizards is the worst team in the league, are probably going to just go through different iterations. There's going to be just some controversy trying. It's just hard. You know, it's hard to build a champion, and he's going to be that. Now I'm curious to see how he responds to that part of it, where it's going to be tough. It's going to be a lot of blowouts. You haven't lost this much in your life.
Look, yes, that is a very, it's a very hard thing to gauge and to judge as to whether or not someone can function in that. And it becomes, I think, much harder when you come into a fully functional organization that wins a lot, and that's what you calibrate to, and that's what you are used to, and that's how you are accustomed to things operating. And then you get dropped into something that isn't all of those things, and you don't know how to survive in that. Like, you've never swum in those waters. So, you know, I think what number one, by the nature of not having some of those guys, you're going to have to take on more of a leadership role, right? And so, you know, if you can dig into why this is good for me, like, what are some positives about why I'm going, why, like, being here, what type of things can I take away from this if this doesn't wind up being the end, you know, a destination in my career? Like, if you can dig into those things and kind of categorically go down them and really trying to maximize, you know, in those spaces, I think it could be okay. But if you're just going there like, yo, hey man, happy to be in Washington, let's hoop, and that shit hits you fast, like, oh, it doesn't matter how I hoop, we're gonna lose. Oh, like, they're at my throat all the time because we're losing, even though I'm scoring. Oh, like, this isn't as buttoned up. Like, when I want to go talk to X, Y, and Z, like, they don't operate like that here. Oh, shit. The family room doesn't run like it used to. Like, when all of those dominoes start falling, if you're not, like, locked in on, hey, man, I'm here to work on being a leader. I'm here to work on, you know, if you are not dialed into what you can take away from that, I'm telling you right now, I played on really good teams to start my career, and then was dropped into some situations where, and luckily for me, like, Utah fell into this, right? Like, I played for the Sixers, first experience, really quickly, you're in the finals. Next year, playoff team with the Sixers, albeit not as good. Then Mavericks, Western Conference Finals. And then I go to the Jazz, and the Jazz are, Stock had just retired, and Karl Malone had just, you know, left to go to the Lakers. Now, the difference is the Jazz were run really well at the time. You know, Jerry Sloan was still there. Larry Miller was still alive. You know, they had a veteran coaching staff. And I think they had guys, even though we were all young and we weren't winning as much, right? So this was the difference. We weren't winning as much as I was used to winning. But we all were professional and we all had something that we were playing for and we understood what we were playing for. And we didn't make the playoffs, but we were able to kind of make the most of that, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I was in, you know, other situations where like, okay, when I was in Golden State the last time, like,
yeah,
like when I was in Golden State and Steph had just gotten drafted, and that was a shit show. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? And I had come from Phoenix and spent half a year in Charlotte where it was not as buttoned up as Phoenix and we weren't winning. And then I got to Golden State where, you know, it was a bunch of babies and Monty Ellis and, you know, it was just early on in the process.
Don Nelson, who'd be like, yo, man, I'm about to go to Lake Merritt. Y'all run your own practice.
Straight up. Nelly would be smoking a cigar like in his truck on the roof of the Marriott 7 seconds before practice started. And I love Nelly. But no, when you're accustomed to winning and those things kind of, when you get places and it's not what you expect and it's not what you're accustomed to and you don't have yourself buttoned up in a way that allows you to navigate that, it could be really hard to you know, continue to be a good pro in those environments is the best way to put it.
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident, it was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
This episode is brought to you by Visible Wireless. Don't miss the premiere of your new wireless savings with Visible. It's time to switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. That's no hidden fees. No, really. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
What do you think about the Washington Wizards side of it, right? I'm not even just talking about this trade in a nutshell, this current one, because they have been in the news. I just said, like, before the Jordan Poole news dropped, we were going to talk about the Kristaps Porzingis news, right? And what Washington is trying to do, they just got rid of Kristaps just for a shitload of picks. They're starting over. But what did you think of that overall trade of getting Kristaps to Boston and then getting Marcus Smart to Memphis, which I think is a really sneaky good deal. I think that was really savvy by Memphis to come in at the 11th hour and getting him. But what do you think about all those trades for all the people that are involved in those trades?
Okay, well, let's start with the Memphis side. What have we said Memphis needs for a long time now? What were one of the things?
Respected vet who could play.
Yeah, with a little bit of shit about him that that would allow him to stand up in the face of some of that bullshit that's happening with those younger players and hold them accountable. And so I think Marcus Smart is a great addition to that. Even if it wasn't on the court, which I believe him to be a good fit there too, but just in terms of solid locker room, professional, no bullshit, had a level of success in the league, has played in big games, understands what it's about. Boom. I think that's really good for them. And this is just in a vacuum, right? Cause I'm not diving into how many picks people had to give up and all of that type of shit. I'm talking about purely the Wizards. That's where you're at as a new front office, as a new fresh look. Like, you know, you're trying to get, you know, a young piece in Jordan Poole that can really go and score the ball, trying to get picks. You're trying to get young talent. And so I have no beef with that. I don't know where they're going to go. Like the next move in this or the next two moves will give me a little bit better idea of like what they're capable of, if that makes sense, and what their vision is. But right now I see what you're doing. Like, yo, you're saying this is a frame off. Like we're taking this down to the studs and we're going to rebuild it. I'm okay with that. For Boston, it's kind of interesting. My dad asked me this morning on our way down to football camp, like, what does Kristaps mean for Boston? And I was like, well, I mean, you know, I don't know. And then I started thinking about it. I was like, well, that's another, you know, it's another shot kind of maker. Like, he's injured a lot, but they're really long, Logan. Like, when I think about Boston, I think about their length, right? Like Jaylen and Jason Tatum and you know, they're bigs and they were long defensively. And I don't, he's not like a great defender or anything, but he fits the mold of long, rangy, and can score the ball. And so I think it's going to be okay. I think Kristaps fits there. I think he fits. And I think in a series like the Miami series where at any given time, Jaylen was off or, you know, somebody wasn't giving you, to have another dude who, you know, if nothing else, he gets you buckets. You know, I think that fits for them. You know, I got to look at his around the rim. I think, is he around the rim? Is he better than people think? You know, in terms of rim protection and just being, he's fucking seven, whatever he is. He's long.
Yeah, it's, well, another thing is he's coming off his best season of his career and he's going into a contract year, Kristaps is. So he going to ball.
Yeah.
He trying to get that back. He's going to ball. The interesting thing is, I just don't know when, I don't know, the biggest thing that the Celtics lacked last year wasn't talent, it was mental toughness. Right. And maybe Al Horford probably just goes into like the Andre Iguodala role of just being the old vet who has all these guys and checks them and makes sure that their mental toughness is right. And it's also, I would say, this is also happening before free agency. Like, just want to make sure that that is out there as well, right? Like, these teams aren't their full versions of themselves yet, right?
Right.
So there could be more people being signed. But I'm curious, just on a vacuum on this one, like, who's going to be the guy that is going to make that beefs up their mental toughness?
Yeah, the backbone
guy? I don't know. The backbone guy. I don't know who that is yet. Kristaps is a trade you absolutely should make. That is something that was glaring for them. Their front court, you see a guy that's Al Horford that is aging. You see Robert Williams, who was great defensively but can't stay on the court all the time as a starting center in this league. And you get Kristaps into the mix. It's I think, Raja, and this might be a little blasphemous, but it's what I thought about this trade was it kind of had some vibes of the Pau Gasol trade to the Lakers. In 2008. And what I mean by that, Raja, is a guy that didn't necessarily win all the time, but had all the intangibles to make a good team great.
Yeah.
And could pass, could be a facilitator, but also get his own shot, but doesn't have to be the guy on any given night. I think because of that, the Boston Celtics are again in prime position to win the East, but I think they need another extra guy for that mental toughness once they get to near the mountaintop of the Eastern Conference in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, there's work to be done on that roster, like, because you don't, I mean, what you're saying is you're basically extracting their two pieces of backbone, right? Like, Marcus Smart was that guy too. And if we're Al Horford, he's getting older, not going to be able to be on the court as much, like, you know what I mean? Whatever role he's going to be playing there, if you're missing like one and a half of those, let's say, you've got to be out looking for those high character nut and bolts type of guy, right? Like, you've got all of your prolific scoring and all of that. You need guys that come in and just, you know, solidify and anchor, you know, that type of talent down. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do in free agency and to address that.
So I want to talk about the Marcus Smart angle of this, right? I think this is a really, really, really savvy move for Memphis, especially considering the fact that if Ja comes back, right, and we've all seen what Memphis has done without Ja in the lineup, I think they can continue that trend of being good and holding down the fort until Ja gets back. And then once he gets back, they have a dude there that is all the guys that we described. I think this is a great move for them and getting them into the thick of the Western Conference. It's early and they still got the free agency. We got a lot of things that we need to figure out. But I think that was just in a vacuum. That was a really, really savvy move from the Memphis Grizzlies, especially given the fact that this was a complicated deal that they were putting together, right? Because this deal, at first, the Clippers were involved to trade Malcolm Brogdon and get him out. And then at the last minute, Malcolm Brogdon, I guess the physical just didn't go through, or for whatever reason that he was deemed unhealthy to be a part of the trade. The trade falls apart. Memphis swoops in and says, and then they get Marcus Smart out of the deal. very savvy. Just got to be on your toes. Like, what is it like that in a front office where you're just like, oh, I got to make this call. I guess this is happening. We're on a string right now, and we're going to work. This is what's going on. It just seems like really hectic during this time while you're preparing for a draft.
It is. I mean, I never had to work any phones or anything like that. That wasn't my job, but I would be sitting in the offices when Griff's phone, when, you know, you're talking about around trade deadlines and around draft nights when a lot of things are going to happen. And, you know, those are phone call after phone call after phone call. Sometimes when you get off the phone with somebody, you can tell he thought he was being fed a line of bullshit. Sometimes he felt like, you know, he was getting some genuine, like, what's the smoke screen? What's not? Like, what's being put out there, you know, to try to get me off the scent? Like, it's a cloak and dagger game those dudes are playing, man. So to be able to come in there as Memphis, sift through all the bullshit and get in on it and really grab a nice piece for your team and a piece that you really, really needed on a lot of fronts, it's huge and really savvy for Memphis. You know, draft night was fun for me, like, not to kind of segue, but like draft night was cool because that's where I was really sitting. All the phones were on. Everybody was in there. So I'm not just sitting there talking to Griff while he's on the phone. Like, I'm watching five different people on their phones all talking and shit's buzzing and you're on a clock. And that really gives you a sense of, like, I don't know, like, you're kind of in a game.
You were also on a team that was, like, vying for it. I mean, when you got there, I don't know if Bron, because you only went there one season, right? So you weren't, like, your draft time was, like, right before Bron came, right? So you guys didn't even know what you guys were planning for, right?
No. I got there. I did a little consulting work before LeBron got there. And then I was hired when LeBron got there. So I came in with LeBron. Oh, okay. So I was there that first year. So the draft.
15 was your 15 was your draft then?
Yeah, so we got Chetty Osman and I think we took Rakeem Christmas, and we might have taken a youngin' from St. John's that was a defense, Sir Dominic Pointer, I think, was the kid we took that year.
So you guys were basically trying to keep a championship roster together and just improve on that, right? Which is also a different experience during the draft, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Trying to find some pieces that weren't like, you know, they weren't super high picks, but quality pieces that would fit the roster. Like, hey, you know, this kid's going to come in and he'll be able to defend, you know, at an NBA level. And Rakeem Christmas was a grown man and played a lot at Syracuse. You know, he can eat up some minutes, you know, maybe at the four. And, you know, Chetty was probably our most prized, you know, pick in that one, like, because they thought the ceiling there was going to be pretty high. But I would say that, you know, I did experience with the J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert trade. I was in Philly when that one took place. So I wasn't back at the offices. I was with the team. We played Philly that night. And I don't remember if it was under the gun, but it was getting close and people were really trying to pull that off. So that one got a little hectic where I was on the phone a lot with Griff and the decision makers in Cleveland.
Tell me the process of that, right? You get a call like, okay, we're thinking about moving this guy. And then you get a call like, what is the first call versus like, okay, it's the deal's done now. Like, what is the hecticness from the beginning to the end?
Well, I mean, so it started that morning, like after a shoot around for me with, you got to forgive me, this was a while ago, but it was in and about like, hey, what do you think about this? Right. And so I imagine, you know, Griff has the guys that he really, really trusts. They've done numbers and he's asking a few of us, hey, what do we think? Right. And so you go through what you know, kind of think, and then, you know, Griff takes it back to whatever he's going to do next. And then the next call will come through like, you know, well, what do you think for that? So here's what we would have to do to get that. And you'd be like, well, you know, here's what I think. Then again, he's going back to his numbers, guys. What pieces need to be thrown into that? What pieces do you think you can extract from them that might not be in the deal right now? How does that look? So then, you know, then it's like, all right, we need to get on with ownership. And everyone's going to kind of Griff's, I don't know, let's say there were four of us that he really wanted to have opinions with Dan Snyder and brain trust with the owners. Now you're on there and you're selling why you think that'll work. And they'll go around the phone and everyone's giving their two cents as to why you think it will work, why you think it won't work. Then that ball's in their court now, right? So like I'm out of the equation. I'm going about you know, making sure everything's okay at the arena.
Because at this point, you're like kind of an advisor, right? At this point, you're like, okay, this is my two cents. Okay, now like I got to go on with my day.
Yeah, I'm an advisor, but I'm also David Griffin's like proxy on the road, and we got a game that night. So while he's working phones and handling business, I'm essentially, I mean, I hate to say general managing because I really wasn't, but I was making sure everything was good on the road in the general manager capacity, right? Like everything's tightened up. And so then, you know, I get a call as the lights are going down for the anthem. And Dion Waiters is at home. Now, Dion, if anybody knows Dion, I tell this story.
Billy,
through and through. And
Shout out Cliff on the call, Temple University, buddy.
We straight up.
Shout out Billy.
But if you know Dion, well, I had to have multiple conversations with Dion that year about, hey, look, LeBron's here, Kyrie's here, Kevin Love's here. It's not your ball. All right. There's no world in which it's going to be your ball, even though.
Is that the conversation that the Golden State Warriors are going to have next year? Sorry. Go ahead.
Chris Paul's accomplished more maybe. So I don't know. But like Dion, I'm like, Dion, there's still a lot to eat. We're going to need you to come off the bench. There are a lot of shots there. And these are the conversation I have to have. So when he's at home and we don't have LeBron and we don't have Kyrie, guess who gets to shoot all the shots?
Oh, Dion Waiters.
Dion Waiters. So this is I'm just painting the picture. We're in Philly. He's bought like 45 to 50 tickets, and it's his ball because there's no LeBron and there's no Kyrie tonight. And I get
a call. He's about to get 40 tonight. Like, bro, I'm about to get 40.
He's about to get 40, bro. I get a call as the lights are dimming. I shit you not. Get Dion Waiters out. He can't play tonight. I'm like, what? And so I had asked them, sorry, let me go back. I had asked David Griffin, Trent Redden, and Kobe earlier in the day, hey guys, look, because I was looking at this from a player's perspective, right? They were looking at it through the business lens, and that's their job. And I was looking at it kind of through a hybrid lens. And I'm like, look, feels like this thing has traction. I only ask that if we're going to do it and if he's going to get traded, let's do it early. Let's do it so he can let his family know not to come to the game. Let's do it, you know, so he doesn't have to go to the game. Let's just get it done. Let's get it done early. It seems like we're there. Let's do it. But it didn't happen until the lights went down. Get Dion off the court. So.
Like national anthem.
No, it is the national anthem.
You got to find him.
I walk out during the anthem. I can't pull him off as the anthem's playing. So I got to stand there kind of at attention, let the anthem go off. We're the guest team. We're the away team. So we get announced first. Guess who's the first fucking name called?
Dion Waiters.
Before I can get to him, it's Dion Waiters. And so I got to get like whoever, I don't know who on the staff. I was like, no, 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 kill that. He can't go out. So I had to literally pull that dude off after he had got announced in the starting lineup in Philly.
And also, bro, Dion Waiters is Philly, bro. He is Philly.
Straight up.
Up and down, bro.
Bro, I felt terrible, man. I know Dion wanted to fight me. I had to take him back in the back. And then the craziest part was I couldn't tell him where he got traded to because the deal wasn't like all the way done yet. And so I couldn't really divulge anything. And he was sitting in the back and he was miserable. And I finally said to Griffin, I said, listen, man, I have to tell him. I can't watch this man sit back here wondering where he's going, not getting to play in front of his home team. And
his family's already here. He got to talk to his family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we wound up telling him. But that was my experience with like a trade like that.
Tough, bro. That's tough. Yeah. And like it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the pod. Just, you know, you think you're, that's the cruel part of the NBA. That, you know, y'all get paid a lot of money, but like, dog, y'all go through a lot of shit. You get paid for the bullshit is what Dennis Rodman says, right? And like, man, he thought he was going to be on a champion. Fortunately, he went to Oklahoma City, he ended up in Oklahoma City, fortunately. Yeah. But damn, bro, like that's tough.
It's tough. No, it's tough. I remember saying to him, hey, Dion, this is going to be a good move for you, bro, because there's going to be some food on the table. You can actually eat in the way that you weren't going to be able to eat here. I know it don't feel good, but you got to trust me on that, you know? And you got a dude looking at
you. He wound up doing fine. Dion wound up doing good, man.
Dion was straight. But it's tough. I told my story. Shit. They were like, hey, we know you're about to get on this bus to go to the Staples Center. And I got a call from one of my friends from the CBA. He was like, yo, you just got traded. I'm like, what? He said, yeah. I said, how the hell you know I got traded? Because I haven't seen or heard anything. He said, well, Jason Richardson's wife is one of my best friends, and you just got traded for Jay Rich. So good luck. You're going to Charlotte. I'm like, what? Man, I got on the phone. Yeah, bro, got traded to Charlotte. You got 24 hours to get back to Phoenix, get all your shit, kiss your wife and kids, and report to Charlotte.
Where was y'all at? Hey, where was y'all? Was y'all at the Lowe's or was
we were at the Beverly staying, bro? Wilshire, brother?
Oh no! Yeah, oh no! Also, bro, like I don't know how many people like know LA from where we're at, bro, but the Beverly Wilshire to LAX is tough. Especially like during rush hour, it's tough, bro. It makes an adult out of your ass just going through that traffic. Especially, bro, you had to go. Wait, did they at least give you PJ to Phoenix and PJ, to Charlotte?
What are you talking about?
I mean,
about,
they do, man? That. What'd they do?
They don't do that for me. They did. they do a first class ticket, take your ass through LAX, bro. Good luck with that.
Damn, bro, played that boy.
Yeah,
damn.
Straight up. Me, Boris, and what was my young fella's name, man? What was Sean's name from University of Virginia, man? But the three of us got traded together, man. It was misery loves company, right? I felt bad. But when I saw Boris and Boris was looking at me all, I was like, man, at least somebody's going with me, bro. Fuck.
Bro, I love Boris, bro. I don't know. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about right now, but I love him, bro. Just, like, he sets this mythical creature, bro. He's just this mythical person, bro. We're okay, let's go. I know you got stories. We haven't talked. Yeah, we haven't talked. For full disclosure, everybody, real ones, this podcast is literally so me and Roger can talk twice a week. I haven't talked to him in like a week. So I'm catching up with the rest of you guys.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed, use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/RingerMBA. Just go to Indeed.com/RingerMBA right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tell us, Roger. What happened?
So I was out in Salt Lake. Vibes were high. You know, went to Valters, tapped into Valters, had a nice meal. Just
you know, Valters was fucking closed All Star Weekend, bro. They had just nothing but private events. Mm. That's why I was miserable in Salt Lake, bro. Like there was nothing cool for me to do. Anyway,
yeah, go ahead. That sucks. D and I enjoyed a nice meal at Valters, and then we, you know, Boris hit me and was like, "Yo, do you want to come by the crib tomorrow?" I'm like, "Yeah, man, I'll come by. What you got going on?" He was like, "Well, I just, you know, chilling, me and a couple friends." I'm like, "Bet." So we make our way down to Boris's crib, beautiful crib up on the hill, glass, all of that. And so, you know, a couple members of the Jazz staff are there hanging out. And Boris is got his cheese laid out, right? Charcuterie board. The charcuterie board was laid out. And we were just going through different bottles. It was like a wine tasting at Boo Boo's crib, bro. It was gorgeous, man. We were looking out on the city from the crib. The cheese, I don't eat cheese, but the board was great. And then Boris was like the sommelier, bro. He's like, he brought out a white, then he brought out a red, and he brought out another red. And then he's like, which one of those reds did you like better? And then you're like, okay, I like the first one. So he brought that red back out.
Then you're faded.
And then we're faded. But I say all that to say I told him I had never told him before, and everyone that was there, I said, Boris, just so you know, you're a podcast like legend. Like on our show, people who listen, and for between Logan and I, like you're a podcast legend on Real Ones, bro. People love you. And he's like, what? Why? And I'm like, Boris, what? Do you remember the stories you told when you hopped on here about fucking rhinos and hippos coming through the grass, dog? Like you're a legend.
Jeez, I think honestly, bro, I think Boris, I would be curious to hear your opinion. I think Boris and Juan Toscano-Anderson are the best interviews you've ever done on this pod.
Yeah,
what do you think? At least they're my favorites. What other ones do? I mean, Tim Duncan is there too. Flex, we got to do the flex. Tim Duncan on Real Ones was great. We got to get the flex.
Shit, man. Trix was really good. Trix was a good interview.
Church
is
good.
I enjoyed the Steve Kerr interviews. I thought Steve was good, but yeah, we've been blessed. I mean, we've been blessed,
bro. I know, but like the ones that I came away like, fuck, I was so happy. Like the Tim Duncan interview was great because we got Tim Duncan and he was very great. But like it was interesting because people don't know this. We had to do this during January 6th, which you guys could just, you guys Google whatever happened on January 6th. So it was like a mind fuck. and then we had to, and then like the audio was messed up, right? So like we, for all of us, like it was just kind of messed up. So like just from an experience, like just as my head was all fucked up, that was like, that was the only part. It wasn't physically fun because like you had to go to real life afterwards. Yeah. And then the Steve Kerr interviews were fun. Just because the second one, we always make the running joke. Every time I see Steve, like, you always get in trouble immediately after on our podcast. Like, something bad happens, because it was funny, because we fucking, like, the first time we had Steve Kerr, we're rambling, we're 47 minutes in, we're talking, we're vibes. But anyway, yeah. I told Steve, like, the first time was when KD got in my mentions and was talking about that's hilarious after the comments that Steve Kerr made about the seasons after KD left versus first, and it was out of context. It was the whole brouhaha with everybody know. And in the second one, like a week after he comes on the pod, Jordan Poole gets punched in the face. It's a bad omen. I don't know if he's coming back.
No more Steve Kerr.
You know what was fun? Pod.
It was fun talking to Boris up there. Not to go back to that, because I mentioned that, like, you know, some of the Jazz staff was up there because Boris is really tight with those guys and stuff. And so it had been a while since I have been around the NBA.
Did he play in Utah? Why is he in? Yeah. Like, is he? He played in Utah.
Absolutely, okay. He played well in Utah too. Right. Secured a couple more bags, I think. I mean, I don't know, but he we talked a lot of basketball, obviously. And Boris is heavily involved with the French national team. And so, you know, we talked about Wemby. We talked about some of the other kids they have in the draft process. You know, the Jazz brass that was there was talking about some of the, they have so many picks in the draft that they've had, I don't know, 100 and change workouts, they were telling me, with these college kids. So it's been exhausting their process trying to get eyes on all of these kids. And so, you know, it was cool for me because it gave me a little fix. Like, I don't get it all the time, right? Like, yeah. I got a little NBA fix. I got to sit around and talk. I wasn't talking like 13 and 14 year old hoops. I was talking grown man hoops a little bit. And that made me happy.
That's awesome, man. Dog, we got to get you out to, you, bro, I know, I get it. It's hella packed, bro. We got to get you at least one or two Miami Heat games this year, dude. What the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, no, I owe it to the Heat, man. I owe it to the Heat, okay? They've been too good. Yeah. They're too consistent a franchise. They throw me some parking passes. I don't even need tickets. You give me some parking passes and I'm good. It's the parking for me, Logan.
It's the park, bro. It's, if the, they parking, give you parking passes and a ticket, you'll be fine. You'll get, didn't you get parking passes when you went to go see Brooklyn 2 years ago? Did you get parking passes for those?
Nah, I had to park, damn it. I had to park at Bayside. Anybody knows Miami? Like, I'm parking across the street at Bayside, waiting 45 minutes to get out of the parking lot once the game's done. I miss me with that.
Bruh, I had to take some family to the fucking Oakland A's game a week ago. And man, I fucking hate driving to the Coliseum. Fucking hate it. Anyways, that's our show. You got anything else you want to talk about? Any more trades that we want to do?
No, I'm just really excited. Hey, look, I'm waiting. I'm just, the countdown is on for that number three pick and Portland, bro. That's what I'm waiting for. I want to see what happens. I am locked in.
What do you think? What's the spec prediction? I don't know. What do you think's going to happen? What you want?
I have no idea. I have no feel on it, and I have no idea. Bro,
this is what I want. Can I just tell people what I want? We're talking about Miami. Can we just
tell them what you want, son? Work.
I don't give a fuck. Tell me what you want, son. I want Dame Lillard to go to Miami. Can we just make that happen, please? Can we just fucking do it? Can we just figure it out? I don't know. Can we just fucking figure it out? I don't know.
That'll get me to a Heat game.
Yeah. You know what I mean? That'll get me to a Heat game. I'm trying to go to a Heat game too. Shit. I'll try to go too. Shit. Let's get to it. It's Thursday. I haven't seen my bud in a while, but get to a little segment we like to call Real One of the Week. I got two Real Ones of the Week.
That's what's up.
One is Janet Jackson.
Oh.
I saw Janet Jackson last weekend at the Shoreline. Man, what a great performance. I felt honored. It was pretty great. Ludacris opened up. It was just a great vibey show. It was awesome. It was like, I don't think I need to have to say this to all my rules, but if Janet Jackson is in your city, you should probably go see her. I'm just throwing that out there. One of the best to ever do it. And another I want to do is one of my partners, who I'm really, 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 really excited for. Kayla Johnson, of Together. She is with Together now. She just, I think she executive produced a film called Phenom for Paramount Plus. Kayla is one of the best in the business. She kicks ass. She's doing a great job, and she's doing everything that she wants. Fucking Sue Bird, another friend of the show, showed up to her premiere in New York last of this film Phenom. So maybe you gotta go check out Phenom. Shout out Kayla Johnson, who's a motherfucking legend. And those are my two real ones of the week: Kayla Johnson and Janet Jackson. You know, so who's your real one of the week? Who's your real one of the week, Robert?
I'm going to do two as well. One is going to be a team. It's going to be the U.S. Women's National Team, and friend of the show Meg Rapinoe and company Alex Morgan, Julie Ertz, and the crew.
Shout out Trinity Rodman in the building.
Yeah, word. It is one of my favorite. Like I love World Cups and stuff like that. But I specifically love the Women's World Cup. My wife was a big soccer player, played in college and stuff like that. So I've always enjoyed watching our national team playing women's soccer in general. So they'll be a real one of the week for me. And then my second one, if you'll allow me to do it, man, is gonna be my young buck Dia Bell, who has been
what a fucking week for the god Dia Bell.
Yeah, it's been cool traveling around the country with him, going into his sophomore year, going to these camps, meeting these amazing coaches and seeing these amazing institutions and facilities, and it's just been really good, you know, dad and son time, man. And he as humble as he is, has been doing pretty well, man. So shout out to Dia Bell, real one of the week for the last week, man.
If you wanna see why he's real one of the week, just Google Dia Bell and look at the news on Dia Bell. Okay. Go ahead. I just wanna say, man, shout out to you, Rob, bro. Cause like we've been seeing your fucking journey as a dad and going to recruiting trips and shit. You guys don't see the real ones chat all the time, where we just get the random tweet of his son highlight tape. But like, bro, I don't have kids, but you have been really just like, you know, an inspiration, just like a good guide of a father to see like how a motherfucker just raises his kid and just be a good dad. So like, shout out to you, bro.
I appreciate
that.
I'm
really
being
honest,
kind.
Bro. Like,
you're
I'm,
too
I'm
kind.
Really serious.
Any parent knows this. You see the good times, bro. It's plenty of, you know, like that shit ain't all roses. No bed of roses, as Freddie Mercury said, right?
Take,
no pleasure
take the compliment, Ra. Take
but
the compliment,
I'll take it.
Ra, bro.
I'll take it.
We love
listen,
you, bro.
Like, I'm excited. I get to go watch my young buck, Ty Bell, up in Gainesville.
My fave?
Yeah.
My fave?
Live period with his high school team. So as soon as we get off this pod, we're picking D up from football practice, and we're on our way back up to Gainesville to watch Ty's high school basketball live period team camp.
There you go, man. We will see you guys. Let's get rah-rah up out of here. That was our Thursday edition of Real Ones. We'll see you guys on Monday. Whew. If this is any indication, I can't wait to talk Monday because it's going to have to be lit. Okay. Tap in. All the shits. Bye.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.